Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and on this show I explore the leading edge of consciousness, sexuality, all aspects of our evolution. And tonight it is about sexuality. It's a whole series I've been doing on Tantra and the evolution of consciousness as it fits in with our body. And I'm very excited tonight about the guest. Her name is Sherry Winston, and she's the author of Women's Anatomy of Arousal. She's a holistic sexual educator. And Sherry, I'm very happy you're here.
Well, Alan, I am delighted to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Right, because I've had a lot of people on who discusses inter tantra and the understanding of what that is. But what I really love about you and what I ask everyone is, what is the physiology of the sexual anatomy we have? It's so complex and so multifaceted, and people really, even the tantra teachers, they don't really understand or explore it. And so I'm hoping we will tonight.
Well, I'll also add that most medical professionals don't actually understand the system. So it isn't just tantra teachers, it's also doctors, midwives, practitioners, and sexuality educators. And that's because our cultural model of genital anatomy is incomplete, both for men and women. The book I just wrote really focuses on women's sexual anatomy and also really understanding female sexuality, but the truth is we don't have a good integral model of the male system either, unfortunately.
Wait, so what parts are we missing? Because, we have those parts, we just haven't labeled them. What are they?
Well, let me give you a little background first to help people understand how I put this puzzle together myself. My own background is that I started out as an artist, became a massage therapist 30 years ago, and then realized my path was to be a midwife. And along that path, I became a doula, a childbirth educator, a lay midwife, then got a bachelor's degree in nursing and went on to become a nurse midwife gynecology practitioner, and spent 20 years in the world of birth. And about 10 years ago, retired from that and went really basically deeper in on that same path from birth deeper into the realm of sexuality. Mm-hmm. And because of my background and coming from all these different directions, I also studied all sorts of holistic healing and energy healing and visualization and herbs and all this natural healing modalities. Mm-hmm. Because I had all these different diverse backgrounds, I was able to discover these puzzle pieces, these missing pieces, and put them together. And so the big picture that I really want to give people is to understand that it's an integral system, that sex and reproduction and pleasure are not separate things. It's all one system, multi-purpose, integrated. And
okay.
So that's a really sort of important foundational understanding.
Wait. So you're saying sex and reproduction and pleasure and also a kind of charge for the whole nervous system is also part of that. We are refining our nervous system, I think, with the sexual energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly right. And so what are we missing, which is really the question you asked.
That is, because...
Yeah, it's the big question. And so what we're missing in the female genital anatomy is the understanding that women have a network of structures that are responsible for arousal and orgasm. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that most of the structures even exist. So
you mean anatomists, people who dissect bodies and look, well, of course they're dissecting dead bodies, but I mean, you know, people have not discovered that there's these parts to us, these hidden chambers. I mean, that's fascinating.
I know it sounds crazy. Well, here there's a whole interesting history about the study of anatomy, and the truth is, most of these parts were discovered somewhere along the way, and mm-hmm. then they got lost. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting in the study of Western culture and the history of healing and medicine and the study of anatomy is that our representations mirror our cultural models about female sexuality.
What's our representations? And what do you mean?
The pictures in the anatomy books, the pictures that are now in our sexuality books and our textbooks. These images, what if a woman goes to the gynecologist and there's a diagram on the wall of her anatomy, those images, those pictures are missing parts. And part of the reason that they're not there is because female sexuality went through a period in the Victorian era where women were considered to be non-sexual beings. They didn't have a libido. They didn't have orgasms. That whole Victorian ideal that women were pure and spiritual and non-sexual and only had sex because it was their duty. What happened during that time period is all the parts responsible for arousal and orgasm got left out of those images.
You mean the clitoris?
The whole system.
What we've gotten back is the
head of the clitoris.
Oh. Okay.
We got that back about 100 years ago.
And we got the G-spot.
We're getting that back, but even most people's understanding of what's called the G-spot's incorrect, because it's not a spot. It's actually a tube of erectile tissue that surrounds the tube of the urethra.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Yeah, no. Of course, I've tried to study as much female anatomy as I could. I didn't know that there was, that was actually it. And so what else are we missing?
Well, there's three parts of the clitoris. The part we know about that we think of as the clitoris is actually the head of the clitoris. And I do want to say it is a remarkable structure. It is the most sensitive organ in the male or female body. It has a truly remarkable amount of nerve endings, and it is the jewel of the female erectile network, but it's the tip of the volcano. There's two more parts to the clitoris. There's a shaft of the clitoris, which is under the hood, and two legs, like a fat wishbone.
Two legs to the clitoris?
There are two legs, one on either side, that anchor the clitoris to the arch of the pubic bone. We just talked about what I call the urethral sponge. I don't call it the G-spot because it isn't a spot, and Grafenberg, the man who it's named after, didn't have one.
Right.
I call it the urethral sponge. There are also two big wads of erectile tissue called the vestibular bulbs, and they're like fat parentheses that go around the sides of the vaginal opening, and the tops of those bulbs connect to the shaft of the clitoris.
These are all very erotic, highly sensitive arousal tissues, right? I mean,
And there's one more part. There's
also
a structure in the floor of the vagina between the wall of the vaginal canal and the anal canal. And all of those structures I just mentioned are made out of erectile tissue.
Erectile means that they fill up with blood and they get engorged.
Exactly right, just like a penis.
Right. But the sensations of each of those parts, I would imagine, is slightly different in a sensitive woman.
Well, you mean different from woman to woman, or different?
No,
from
different
part to part?
Within the woman themselves. Each part actually is a different type of pleasure zone. They don't all feel the same. I mean, my theory is women actually have more pleasure than men anyway, because they have that much more complicated and complex system. You know, but
well, I think first of all, just in terms of the amount of erectile tissue. I believe that men and women have basically the same amount. Pound for pound, inch for inch, we got the same amount of stuff.
We just have it all in one place and you have it spread out. Is that it?
Exactly. Exactly right. Now, it is true that different parts of that network can respond to different types of stimulation. Mm-hmm. Again, similar to the male genitalia, different parts tend to like different kinds of stimulation.
Right.
But it's really important to understand that this erectile network works best when the whole thing is activated, when the whole system's engorged. But women can get aroused and orgasmic with just part of the system activated.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you for that.
Your penis is kind of an all-or-nothing thing, right?
Yes.
Like the whole system's, right?
Yeah, that's why we relate to women as if it's an all-or-nothing thing, but you're saying it's not.
It's not. So for a lot of women, because all we have in our mind, in our map, our mental model, is the head of the clitoris. So a lot of stimulation, and it's such a good part, a lot of stimulation goes there. And many women, probably most women, have learned that as their main path to arousal and orgasm.
Right.
And the rest of the structures aren't getting played with, they don't get engorged, and you're not using your whole instrument.
Are there other parts that you didn't mention, like, you know, to create a vaginal orgasm or a cervical orgasm? Are there also additional parts in there?
Well, there's, as I said, it's a system. And so what I just talked about was the erectile network, which is a part of the system. But the uterus is also a player in arousal and orgasm.
And pleasure as well, you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. And most people in our culture don't understand that the uterus is part of that system. That's why we have an epidemic of hysterectomy, of removal of the uterus.
Why?
Women are routinely told that the uterus does not play a part in arousal and orgasm. And so if there's any problem with the uterus, particularly if a woman is over 40 and is considered that she's probably done with her reproductive life, they just take it out.
That's awful. Isn't it awful?
It is for any number of reasons, including the fact that then those women usually do have an impact. Their arousal isn't as easy. Their orgasm is not as powerful because there's a part of the system that's now missing. And the sad thing about that is that we're the only industrialized country in the world that behaves this way. Our rate of removal of the uterus, of hysterectomy, is 10 to 50 times higher than any other country.
So to prevent hysterectomies, what do you suggest women do?
Well, they should not get their uterus out unless there's a really, really good reason. Now, if it's cancerous, I understand taking it out, but about 95 to 96% of hysterectomies are not done for cancer.
And what are they done for? Why?
Oh, fibroids, bleeding problems, things like that, benign conditions. So women, just like in any other aspect of our health care, you really have to educate yourself. You have to find out your options. You have to really do your homework. And you have to search out the healthcare practitioners that understand that taking something out is not the solution to the problem.
That
surgery is the last resort when it's really necessary, but that there are many, many, many things to do prior to that to deal with these kinds of problems. And, you know, when I was talking before about how we don't have an accurate understanding of the integrated nature of our sexual reproductive system, it leads to things like this.
Yeah.
Because
no, what you're saying is so important for women to hear and for everyone to hear. I mean, so
it is, because if people get that it's an integrated system, then when somebody said, oh, we'll take your uterus out, you don't really need it, women would go, I don't believe that. I know it's part of the system. So that's just one example of why it's so important for people to really understand what's there and how it works. I mean, it's great to understand because you can have better arousal and orgasms, but it's also important to understand for these other reasons.
Well, what else is part of the system? So what are the players?
Well, there's it's important to understand the nerve pathways, the innervation of the genitalia, and most people and most textbooks talk about a nerve that goes to the more external parts of the genitalia. That nerve is actually called the pudendal nerve. The word pudendum is Latin for shame.
Really?
Strange, huh? Yes. We have some naming challenges. I prefer to call it the external genital nerve. And it's one of the major nerve pathways to the genitals. But because people don't understand that the uterus, the vagina, the anal canal and rectum, the inner parts of that erectile network that I just discussed are supplied by a different branch, a different nerve. That's a branch of the pelvic nerve. Mm-hmm. And that is the deeper genital nerve, the more internal nerve that goes to the system.
And where does that go to, that nerve? To which part of the system?
It goes to the vagina, the uterus, the bladder, the internal part of the urethral sponge that I was just referring to, the deeper layer of pelvic floor muscles. And I don't know if I said the anus and anal canal. So the more inside stuff. So the nerve pathway that most people think of as being the genital nerve goes to the more outer parts, the more superficial or external structures.
Okay, I get it.
So think of it this way. Most women, we focus our attention on the clitoris, which is a fine thing. That's that more external nerve pathway.
Okay.
Once we learn to really activate both nerve pathways, again, we go back to that we're playing the whole instrument instead of just one part. Or think of it like a band. If you're singing a song and playing the guitar, it can sound beautiful. It can be wonderful, and that's what clitoral stimulation can be. Beautiful, wonderful, great path to orgasm, the easy one, the one we mostly find first.
Right.
But if you're playing the same music and then you've got the drums and the bass and the keyboard and the cymbals and you've got all these other instruments playing, suddenly the music that's possible to make is wider in range and you can do so much more. And that's what we can learn to do with our genitalia, essentially when we learn to play the whole instrument. We can really expand what's possible with our arousal and our orgasmic capacity.
So how would a man stimulate those internal nerve endings, those nervous parts?
That is such a good question.
The one we all want to know.
I would hope so.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I would say it's important for men and women to actually look at these images, look at these pictures so that you can get a really good idea of what's really there. It's like looking at a good map before you go off into the woods. It really helps.
And that's why I love what you said for men to ask directions if they're lost, because you know men hate to ask directions, but I think it's a good idea.
Well, you know, female sexuality is very changeable. It's fluxing. It's different today than it was 2 weeks ago because I'm at different parts of my cycle. It's different in the morning. It's different at night. It's different with my mood. And female sexuality is much more lunar. It's always flowing and fluxing. And the more masculine sexuality tends to be steadier.
Right.
It's more similar day to day.
It's like the sun. It just goes.
It's like the sun. And so how could men possibly understand what's going to work at this moment? Because it
that's
can be completely
my yes.
Different.
How could we possibly? We can't. Is that you saying
you
we
can't
possibly? Okay. Now I
you
feel
can't. That's
better.
Why we have to communicate. That's why we have to be able to talk and communicate because it's different all the time and it's different at different levels of arousal. So to get back to your question about how to play with it, I was saying that the uterus is a player in arousal, and I'll get back to the nerve. But first, let me describe. As a woman becomes aroused, the uterus gets pulled up and forward. And
up
what that does
forward.
Is it opens up space at the back of the vagina.
At the back, because it's being pulled up.
I see.
Okay. Okay.
Now, during orgasm, the uterus literally moves up and down. It pulses up
and down. It contracts. That's the contractions, you're saying.
Well, it isn't. There's two levels of contractions. The uterus itself is basically three layers of muscle. So the muscle itself contracts, like if you were squeezing and releasing a fist. But it's also literally moving up and down inside the woman's body. In fact, if you had your fingers in the vagina all the way at the back during orgasm, you would feel the cervix, that's the bottom part of the uterus, coming down and tapping your fingers and then lifting back up and tapping your fingers and lifting back up.
Wait,
and
so
that movement is part of orgasm, and a really good part of orgasm.
A really good orgasm. But that cervix itself, now, is that just an opening and into the uterus? Is that what the cervix actually is, or is
it a... The cervix actually is just part of the uterus. The uterus is like an upside-down pear, and the narrower part of the pear sticks into the back of the vagina. The part of the uterus that sticks into the vagina is called the cervix. In the middle of the cervix, there's an opening.
Okay.
So what happens really is the whole uterus is moving up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why? This gets back to the nerves. You're asking about those nerve pathways.
Right.
And when the uterus is pulled way up, at high-level arousal, it's pulled way up, opens up the back of the vagina, and those nerve pathways are entering in the back of the vagina. So if a woman is not aroused enough and the uterus hasn't moved up, you can't really even access easily those nerve pathways.
Wait, so you have to...
And you don't really want to.
So even... So the... You wait, just let me follow, because I'm looking at a map here while you're talking.
Good.
So the uterus gets aroused, it opens up, the vagina itself expands during that arousal as well?
Well, what the textbooks were saying for a long time was that the vagina balloons open. But it isn't actually the vagina ballooning open. It's that the uterus is moving up and forward, and that's what causes the back of the vagina to have more space.
So the vagina, the uterus moves up and forward because of the stimulation in the exterior, like the clitoral stimulation and the labia stimulation. Would that affect the uterus?
All of it's because it's a system.
I see.
It's one system. So arousal itself, the process of arousal, is what's going to move the uterus up, because the uterus has actually got two muscles that are attached to the top of it. In books, they're called the round ligaments, but they're actually muscles. There's one on either side, and they're like a cord of muscle that goes from the top of the uterus over the pubic bone, and the other end attaches to the muscle that goes around the vaginal opening. This is what I'm talking about how sex, reproduction, pleasure are all one system. The uterus isn't separate. It's connected to the muscle that goes around the vaginal opening. So what happens as we get aroused is we build up muscle tension. And that muscle tension causes those corded muscles to contract and pull the uterus up and forward.
Okay, because the uterus is connected to the whole thing. And the uterus then, when it comes up and forward, it's actually aroused. And that gives the woman even more pleasure because they're feeling uterine arousal.
They're feeling that uterine movement with orgasm.
I see. And
which is going to enhance fertility.
But it's also very pleasurable, I'm sure, as well.
Exactly. Because it's all one system. Pleasure,
right.
Fertility, reproduction, all one thing. Not separate.
And so the vagina itself is really the thing from the exterior to the cervix. That's really all, that's really what the, it's like a tube then, right?
Exactly. The vagina, I mean, and people often refer to female genitalia as the vagina, but of course the vagina is just this one part of this whole system, and it is just that canal. And the vagina is very much like an accordion. And when it's at rest, it's like an accordion that's all smushed up. The walls fold in, they touch each other. It's a potential space. Mm-hmm. And again, like an accordion, it has remarkable abilities to expand. That's why babies spit out of vaginas, because they've got this wonderful expandability.
Like the penis itself. You would think, how does it go from that to that? I mean, it's like, you know, so I guess it's...
Indeed. Yeah. When I used to be a midwife, I would tell women during their pregnancies, because when anyone's pregnant, there's this tendency to look down at your vagina and think, there's no way a baby's sitting out of that hole. It just doesn't seem possible. And so I would remind them of penises and how when a penis is small and soft, how it's real stretchy.
Mm-hmm.
And then how it can get really big. And that vaginas, basically, and the whole genital system is made up of the same stuff. And so it's really stretchy and can get really big.
Right.
And I think it's important for women to know that, to have that mental model, because it's important for us to believe that our bodies will work. And that indeed, when we're having a baby, that it will fit, that it will come out.
And it does. I've seen a birth, and it's pretty amazing to see that happening. So about arousal, now that I have the map pretty much, and I know all the parts and the directions, how do we get...
Well, you know some. There's more, but you got
there's
the basics.
More? Oh.
Well,
we
there's,
spend
there's
a
all
whole,
sorts of little details, but
we
you
could
got
spend
the
a whole
basics.
Weekend just looking at the map, I suppose. But
exactly.
Let's get to the really good stuff. I mean, it's all good, but how do we get to the arousal? How does, like, the name of your book, How Does a Woman's Anatomy of Arousal? How do we get to the arousal part? The map for buried pleasure is the subtitle. So,
Well, I think, again, I always tend to start with these big pictures, but I think it's really helpful to understand some things about sexual energy and arousal and how they operate, because I think when we have that framework, it helps us understand how to play with the parts. So
right.
The framework I use is actually a Taoist model of yin and yang, which says that the universe is made up of these polarities that are in a flowing, harmonic dance together.
Mm-hmm.
We inhale, we exhale, there's night, there's day, there's a sperm and there's an egg. The magnets have a positive pole and a negative pole, and that creates attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this plays out with our sexuality is that for most of us, not for all of us, but for most of us, one of those energies is more central and core and stronger. And for most women, it's the yin energy that's more of our default setting, our core energy. And yin energy, it's slow and it's cool and it's watery, and it starts outside of ourselves with connection and context, and then the energy's got to flow in through all of our other energy centers, and it's got to heat up and coalesce into the genitals. And it gets there last.
It gets there last, you're saying?
Well, it's got to go there. It doesn't begin there. It's got to move there. And it usually
from where?
Time. From the outside, from the edges.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yang sexual energy, which is the complementary force, is the core energy of most men. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it moves in the opposite direction. In other words, it tends to start in the genital.
Right.
And that yang sexual energy doesn't actually have to go anywhere else. And it can just be genital sexual energy and arousal and genital orgasm without ever connecting to any other parts. Now, another just a really important thing to say is that we all have both of these kinds of energy.
Right.
And for those of us who are core yin energy, which is
most women are.
Most women are core yin.
Uh-huh.
Except for the ones who aren't.
Right.
Most men are core yang, except for the ones who aren't. Mm. And some people, like I said, are 50-50 evenly balanced. But for those of us who are core yin and have a stronger yin energy, it means that in order to get aroused, we need to honor that pathway. That first we want to feel connected. We need to feel safe. The energy usually takes some time, like a pot of water that has to come to a boil.
Mm.
And that means that when you're playing with a woman,
right.
Whether it's yourself or a partner, usually you start with the connection. You start with creating safety. You start with the non-sexual parts of the body.
Mm.
And
okay.
you tease and you tantalize and you play and you bring the energy up first. And as the energy starts to coalesce in the genitals, then you go there after the energy has gotten there.
Okay, so you say you tease. Now, what can you be more specific, if you don't mind, when you talk about teasing?
I would be delighted. By the way, I teach over 45 different classes, and this is why, because everything we're talking about, there's a whole class about it. So I usually do a whole class about teasing and tantalizing. But teasing is where you play. It's playful, and the idea is to bring the energy up. So, in other words, you might do advance and retreat, where you get near the genitals, and then you go away.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come closer in again, and then you move away. And every time you do that, you start to build up some anticipation.
And women like that, because it's very frustrating for men. But you're saying women like that because they want that slow warm-up.
Right. They want to be aroused first. Then get their parts played with. Look, if my sweetie, who happens to be male, hops out of the shower naked and I grab a hold of his equipment and I start playing with it, he's delighted. He's happy.
Exactly, yes.
He does that to me, I'm going to want to smack him. And so will most women. Because we're going to go, I'm not there yet. What are you doing? Why are you diving into the crevices? Because our energy tends to move in opposite directions. And that's what we want to understand and honor about each other. I can honor that my partner loves it if he has lots of genital stimulation early on. It makes him really happy.
Right.
On the other hand, why not?
But,
pardon me?
But, no, of course, yes. I can understand that completely.
Right? But, and it's also understandable that unless we have a model that incorporates both kinds of energy flows, it's really hard to understand how somebody whose energy is opposite ours is going to operate.
And especially because the models have been built by men and just thinking, well, women probably feel this way too without checking in, that's where we get the problems that we have, actually. So
and just look at porn, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Porn isn't real. I'll just say an example. In most porn, when they're actually filming it, there's usually a half hour, 45 minutes of arousal of the female porn actress that you don't see.
Mm.
You just see when she's already highly aroused.
Right.
And so this just kind of keeps replicating this bad map for people where they think that's how it's supposed to operate. And they try to do it that way, and it doesn't work. And that's why there's so many women who can't have orgasms or can't have them easily or don't have orgasms from intercourse, are frustrated and unhappy, and that's why so many people are so challenged, because they don't understand that the female, here's another model that's useful. I call it the Pussies and Puppies School of Love.
Okay.
And that female sexual energy is very much like a pussycat.
Mm-hmm.
And male sexual energy tends to operate a lot like a puppy dog.
Right.
And the thing with pussycats, well, if you want to make friends with a pussycat, you don't run up to it, grab it, put it on its back and rub its tummy. Because if you do, you're going to get scratched and the pussycat's going to run away and you're not going to get nearer again.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make friends with a pussycat? You get its attention. You make eye contact. You approach slowly with attunement. You show the pussycat you're safe. You start by touching you rub the back, and as the pussycat trusts you and relaxes, she opens and allows you into the more intimate areas. And if you move with attunement, sooner or later, you will have that purring puddle of pussy that you were after.
So you have to move with attention and attunement. You're saying focus, and attention and uh-huh. and slow energy. Okay, I'm learning something here.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, pussycats are different, right? Some pussycats are really friendly, and you can get in there pretty quick. Other
okay.
pussycats, it's going to take them a lot longer, right?
Especially if they've been scared and abused before and unpleasant experiences. It's going to take even longer.
Oh, and as we all know, and I'll just say it again, even though I think people really get it now, so many women in our culture have had bad experiences ranging from coercive, unpleasant sex to rape, incest, assault, I mean, just abuse. I mean, there's so many women who've had those experiences.
As
now,
opposed to what Winston,
also,
I'm just going to say, like, unlike what men have, like what the quote Winston Churchill said, that sex is like democracy. When it's good, it's very, very good. And when it's bad, it's still pretty good. That's Winston Churchill.
That's a good one.
But here's the thing.
I mean, it's important to remember that there are quite a number of men in our culture who have also suffered from sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to remind ourselves that all the abuse is not directed at women, and there are many men, unfortunately, also, who've had various levels of abuse.
Right.
And also to remember that this isn't really necessarily a man-woman thing, because it's really an energetic thing. And we all have both energies. So if you were in a pussycat mood, in a more yin mood, mm-hmm. you might want to be more seduced. You might want to be more slowly coaxed to open and bloom. And a woman, even if I'm a core yin woman, I could be in a yang mood, right? I could be in one of those moods where, you know, you're just going to grab your sweetie and throw him on the bed and jump on him.
Okay.
So we all have both within us, and it's not a fixed thing. But I'm talking about more generalities and sort of what I think of as our default setting.
Mm-hmm.
And the yang energy, that masculine energy, is more like dog energy. It's enthusiastic and energetic and active and focused. You know, when you're throwing the ball for the dog, the dog is focused on the ball. Right?
Exactly.
And,
so, okay, yes.
Wait, let me just get one more thing in about dog energy.
Good.
At its highest, it's about service. Dogs want to have a job. They love to have a job. You know, cats don't fetch, right? So it's not like one is right or wrong, and we all have both of these sets of qualities within us. But in the sexual arena, polarity is created because we tend to be attracted to somebody who has complementary energy, which means we need to understand how someone whose energy is different from ours operates, so we can play nicely together.
Right. Similar and different. I mean, you want to attract someone who's similar enough to you that you can play with them, but different enough so there's a polarity. That's
well,
so tricky.
Well, I think that attraction is about polarity. You have to be similar enough that you can get along in the objective domain of, you know, work and life and hanging out together. But when it comes to sex, we need that polarity.
Mm.
We need the magnet to have a positive pole and a negative pole for that attraction to be there. And without it, you've just got two lumps of metal lying there.
Right. So, but, okay, I get that. Let's go into deeper levels of arousal. I mean, people talk about these other types of orgasms, the vaginal and the clitoral, and then, of course, female ejaculation we haven't even touched upon, which is, you know, something. So,
we should definitely touch that.
But is it true there are these different types of orgasms, or is it not, or is every orgasm different?
Well, I think that orgasm is a very large and vast realm that includes many different types of orgasmic experiences, and this is true for both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more we expand our pathways to get there, the more we discover these different types of orgasm and the range of orgasm. And when we talk about clitoral and vaginal, remember I talked about the two main nerve pathways?
Right.
Clitoral orgasm means you're mostly using the more external surface nerve pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And vaginal or uterine orgasm is when you're using that deeper, more internal pathway. And if you get both pathways activated, then you get that really big combined orgasm that includes all of those sensations. But orgasm isn't limited to our genitals. We can have energy orgasms. We can have orgasms that are whole body experiences, or that we feel are emanating from our heart or our crown chakra. I teach a class on this. You can have hands-off orgasms. You can just use your, we have an internal toolkit. Everybody comes equipped with tools of the mind and the body and the heart and spirit. And when we learn to utilize those, particularly the body tools of breath and sound and movement, and the mind skills of awareness and attention and intention, you can learn to just breathe and make sound and move your energy with your muscles and your intention and have full body orgasms with your hands with nothing touching your genitals.
Well, we should actually define orgasm. You know, Nicole Dadon says it's when the involuntary, limbic brain takes over and there's involuntary muscle contractions. I mean, how do you actually define an orgasm? I know it's many different things, but what makes an orgasm different than a pure erotic sensation?
Another good question. So, that is part of the definition that arousal, the arousal journey. Let me go back to arousal for a moment. Arousal is an altered state of consciousness, like meditation or daydreaming, or drug-induced altered states or ecstatic trance states you can get into from dancing or shamanic practices. Those are all altered states of consciousness, and arousal is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a journey through these altered states of consciousness. Our minds and our bodies are not separate. Our consciousness is not separate from our body. So altered states of consciousness can be measured or studied by Western science by looking at things like brain waves, blood pressure, the different kinds of chemicals that are released into our body from different glands and organs in our brains. So there's lots of ways of sort of, from a Western science perspective, looking at what goes on during arousal. There is a component of that journey that is conscious and voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
At the point of orgasm, we move into the involuntary, completely involuntary experience once we go over that precipice.
Mm-hmm.
And that
is interesting. That's where
negative.
The most pleasure is actually as well, when we move into a kind of involuntary state.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah,
it's interesting.
And we can learn to expand that. That's the amazing thing. Most people have an orgasm that lasts 15 to 30, maybe 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn to have orgasms that go on for minutes or an hour or more. That's a learnable set of skills, how to have expanded orgasms.
We should do a whole interview just on that, how to have an orgasm for, you know, an hour.
Uh-huh. Because let me tell you, you won't need Prozac if you have hour-long orgasms, because
right.
The endorphins you get last for days.
And that's something everyone can have?
Everyone can have. Learnable skills.
An hour-long orgasm.
Like,
yes.
Think of it like learning to play the piano. If you want to learn how to play Mozart on the piano, you can. It might take a while. There are skills you need to learn. You're going to need to practice. But if you want to learn it, you can. You don't have to. You shouldn't be ashamed if you haven't learned how to play the piano. But if you want to, you can.
And for men as well, men can have hour-long
orgasms? Absolutely.
They
need to learn. Men need to learn how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms.
Well, I'm familiar with that, but that...
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't last, though. I mean, you have to then build the energy again.
It can.
Okay, I want to take that course with you, Sherry.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's really good stuff. So yes, everyone can learn this. And back to how you define what orgasm is.
Yes.
So if you put someone in a laboratory and you're looking at brain waves and you're looking at muscle tension, and all of these other things that Western science can measure, there are things you can measure that will say this is orgasm.
Mm.
But for most of us, we don't need to do that. We know it's orgasm because we feel it. It's a primal animal experience. And again, and I've had people say, well, is an energy orgasm that you have without using your hands the same as a real orgasm or a hands-on orgasm? And the answer is, you know, from a laboratory point of view, if you're measuring it, absolutely.
It is, certainly.
Okay. From what you're experiencing, from what you're feeling, all these orgasms feel somewhat different. Because, like mm-hmm. I said, it's this vast realm of orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
I've made up lists of different flavors of orgasm, like lovegasm.
Wow.
You know, like when you're madly in love with somebody and you have this amazing orgasm and your heart just opens, you know, and
I know,
fills the universe.
That's so nice. I love that one, too. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's a good one. Or laughgasms, where you're having a belly laugh at the same time you're coming.
Well,
that's a good
true.
One, too.
But let me ask you, because we only have another, like, 7 minutes here, is then the object is not always to have an orgasm. Of course, we can have sex and just feel the arousal and the pleasure, and we don't have to have that high state, which I think is okay. But let's talk about the whole body and how this whole anatomy, the sexual anatomy, actually feeds the whole body. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And I will add that, you know, we have a very goal-oriented culture. And so I want to sort of second the notion that it isn't all about the orgasm. It's about all of the wonderful forms of pleasure and connection and intimacy and eroticism that we can experience with ourselves and with others, and that the whole journey is wonderful and important. So it is really mm-hmm. important not to feed into our cultural obsession with the goal.
Right.
And it's also really important, and this is really more directed at women, to become orgasmically proficient, which means that you can have an orgasm when you want to. Because there are a lot of women.
And you teach women how to do that.
I do.
Okay.
Because otherwise, it's hard to enjoy the journey if you don't think you're going to be able to get there when you want. So both things are important. Once you become proficient with your orgasm and you know that you can get there, it's a lot easier to relax and have fun in the journey, knowing that when you want to, you can access your orgasmic capacity.
What's the most important thing a woman needs to know about that?
That it's a learning journey mm-hmm. and that that she's not broken, and that if she hasn't figured out how to do that yet, it's because she hasn't had good maps and teachers, and that she can mm-hmm. learn, that it's learnable.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important.
Is there any preparatory work a woman should do on their own or with a partner, if that's the case?
Well, I think our sexuality begins with ourselves. So I think the most important part of our learning journey and our laboratory is our own solo sex experiences, and I rarely use the word masturbation. Masturbation, the Latin, means to pollute with your hand.
Really?
I don't like that word.
Yeah. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so, but...
Self-love, people call, but yes.
Self-love, solo sex, self-pleasuring, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it that's positive is good for me. But we need to self-pleasure. And women in our culture have a big barrier to overcome around that. But
right.
that's where we learn our orgasmic proficiency. And then it's much easier to have that kind of experience with a partner. So the first thing I tell women is you got to play with yourself. And you got to do it a lot.
Okay. To understand their own anatomy, what works, what doesn't work, I suppose. Yeah.
Right. It's really important. Now, the same goes for men. If you want to learn how to expand your orgasm and how to separate from ejaculation and all of those things, you also need to do that in your solo learning laboratory. As opposed to
isn't there a danger that someone may get, you know, used to doing it one way in the solo journey and not be open to a duet, you know?
It's a great question. The way I look at it is we learn pathways. And a path is a good thing because it gets you where you want to go. It makes an established trail to get you where you want to go. But if you keep going down the same path over and over and that's the only path you use, it becomes a rut and eventually it can turn into a trench and you think there's no other way to get there. So it's another set of learnable skills to discover how to expand your pathways and discover multiple pathways, which is also the way you find your way into your different orgasmic states because you've expanded your pathways. So
take the path,
but
don't make it a rut is what you're saying, really. Right?
Yeah, well, find the path that works and then expand on it, build on it, widen that path, create side trails. Again, there's a whole...
We're almost out of time. I mean, there's so much more to talk about. We just but could you just answer that other question about the way the sexual energy feeds the rest of the body? Because that's something I'm really curious about.
Well, I'll try and do it in a short because I'd love to touch on female ejaculation if we can. But
oh yeah, please, because I'd love to. Touch
I know.
On that too.
Well, orgasms are good for us. That's the arousal and orgasms. If it didn't have to do with sex, your doctor would be telling you to do it every day. It has it has the benefits of meditation, aerobic exercise, improving your self-image, helping you love yourself, nurture yourself, take care of yourself. It's healing energetically and emotionally and psychologically. And a pleasure is a good, healthy, healing thing. It's rejuvenating. It helps keep you young. It creates the endorphins that help us feel good, those feel-good chemicals. So it's incredibly healthy in every possible way to have arousal and orgasm. And if we weren't such a uptight, sex-negative culture, we'd be supported and encouraged in doing that instead of and blocked and inhibited about it.
And everyone would be happier, actually, and we'd all really enjoy ourselves more. So I think people like you and a lot of the conferences I've been to, we're trying to change that so we can definitely be sex positive in a major way. The whole culture can start to appreciate the human body for all the gifts that it's been given. So just talk about a little female ejaculation, then we have to wrap it up. But
okay, well, I'll try and do it quickly. So female ejaculation is real. It's a learnable skill. Some women are natural ejaculators. They always have. They always do. Other women, most women in my experience, learn at some point how to call forth that fluid. In India, thousands of years ago, they called it Amrita, the nectar of life. They considered it sacred. I don't think we have time to go into the physiology, but in my book I explain in detail exactly where it comes from and how that system works. And it's a very sacred experience, and I really encourage people to explore it and discover it, not to make it another should, not to feel like you have to in order to be sexy, but for your own pleasure and that of your partners, it's a wonderful experience to discover and learn how to access.
And it's actually good for the man as well. All that yin fluid is actually increases, at least the Chinese Taoists say that, it increases the energy of the yang.
I believe that we can create an energy circuit with our partner, and that female ejaculation is part of that circuit, and is very restoring. And like I said, in rituals, in where tantra originated, it was sacred medicine. I mean, it was really considered a blessing to share that with somebody. So yes,
nice.
I think it's a wonderful. Besides the fact that it's just absolutely hot.
It is, and the women, I guess, actually, is it orgasmic? Is it a pleasure? I mean, I'm sure it's pleasurable, but is it an orgasmic pleasure ejaculation for women?
Well, some women ejaculate at high-level arousal, so it's not always associated with orgasm. For most women, it's usually associated with orgasm, and it's another expansion of the orgasm. It's another flavor and quality to the orgasm. That, again, for me and for most women I've talked to, really feels quite deep and profound, and I will say sacred. I mean, that is my experience, but it's a deep release that...
Well, the whole thing is sacred, though, also.
Yeah, but some things feel more divine than others.
So tell people how to get in touch with you and what's coming up, what workshops or
talks. My goodness, there's so many things. Well, first of all, the website is intimateartscenter.com. That's intimateartscenter.com. You can also, of course, find it by looking for my name, Sherry Winston, which is S-H-E-R-I, Winston. And the book is really the big thing, and I'm really want people to know this information, and I really hope lots of people get the book, not for my own
lucrative goal, but it's
profound.
No, you did a great job here. I mean, on this book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal is a book subtitled Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. And it really does have a lot of maps in here. It's a very, and you've also done it very well with lots of nice quotes, and it's very academic, but it's also very sexy. So it has everything.
I think it's very accessible, and there's lots of visuals and sidebars and guided tours, and you know, I've been teaching for most of my adult life, so I think I've really, I've never been so proud of anything in my life, and I really feel like this is my mission to get this information out there. I also am launching an internet radio show on Voice America next week, I believe. So Juicy Pleasures with Sherry Winston is launching shortly. My next set of workshops is up in Toronto. People can sign up on my website for my newsletter to find out where I am at. We have a DVD in the works and all sorts of other yummy things. So
well, maybe we'll do another interview at some point. Thank you, Sherry.
I would be delighted. I would be delighted. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. It is a pleasure. That's it. That's the business. That's what you're teaching. I've been talking to Sherry Winston. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening. Bye.